What's up? What's up, YouTube? What's up, TikTok? What's up, Internet? What's up, Spotify? What's up, Apple Podcasts? What's up, what's up, what's up? It's People Pleaser. I'm your boy, Austin Archer, back for another week. You just get me again. That's it, okay? You get what you get and you don't throw a fit, all right? It's been a little bit busy over here in the Blanket Fort recording studio. I have had a hard time getting guests together. I've got, if you're over here on YouTube, you see, we got the HD camera thing going on. We're looking good. I have a second camera that's incoming that was on back order that was supposed to get in this week. It's coming in next week. When I get that second camera in, I'm going to be able to have guests sitting across from me in the studio so that we can have two cameras switching back and forth. In the meantime, I've just been doing like Zoom guests and things like that, but I don't have any Zoom guests lined up, so it's just me again, okay? You can deal with that. Last week's episode was good when it was just us, right? We made it work, and we're gonna make it work again. It's just me, you, the people who are here on TikTok, the people who are here on YouTube, and that's enough, right? That's enough. Speaking of just us and the things that we do together and for each other and symbiotically, the Double Vinyl is funded, dude. It's funded. In less than a week, I launched that thing on Friday. Last Friday was a 30-day campaign, and in 5 days, we got that thing entirely funded. So that's baller. That's dope. I'm just over the moon about that. I'm so excited that that's going to exist. It's not over, though. The campaign continues. They are going to continue running the campaign for the next 25 days, and you can still go and order a copy. So far, I think that we have 60 pledgers. So 60 people have gotten copies. And I think that they print like up to 200 copies of this vinyl. So if you still want one, you can still go get one. There are plenty left. You can still go order one while this campaign is live. Go over to Bandcamp, austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com, or the link in my bio, and click on the button that says The Double Vinyl. Order yourself a copy. If you're not sure, if you're not sold on it, on whether or not it's something you would like to own, go over to Spotify or Apple Music and listen to the album. I was talking about this on a live stream this week. People don't listen to albums all the way through anymore. In this day and age of streaming music and playlists, people have gotten too used to just listening to one song at a time. You really need to go and listen to an album start to finish, especially if it's an album that I put out. I structure my albums in a very intentional way, and this album specifically, Beautiful Things, the Deluxe Edition, streaming now on Spotify and Apple Music, and my Bandcamp, austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. I structure these albums in a very specific way. They sort of have a story and a narrative, a through line, and that they have connective tissue between the songs, and there's a lot to be gained from listening from start to finish. So go take a drive, listen to it. If you like it, if you feel it, if you connect with it, go over to Bandcamp and buy the vinyl, and you'll be one of just a handful of people in the world to own this limited edition special thing. I think that's the other thing that people don't do enough with music these days. One is we don't listen to albums start to finish anymore, and the other is we don't own any physical copies of music anymore. Everything is just free on the internet, so we just listen to it that way. And I get that, but like in a world where so little real stuff actually exists, I really think that our return to owning things on vinyl is really cool and not just like a niche hipster thing, but I think it's something that's like special. Like when I break out a vinyl, it's definitely something where I'm going to put it on and I'm going to listen to that record all the way through. And it's special to own that. So if you want to own it, austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com, you can still go over and get your copy. Thanks to everyone who already ordered a copy. Really appreciate it. Some people on TikTok and on YouTube are asking me about the shirt that I'm wearing. I'm wearing my Nobody Cool Likes Tucker Carlson shirt from my song, Nobody Cool Likes Tucker Carlson. This was made by Sarah Epperson, who is a great designer. You can also find that at the link in my bio. There's a button that says the Tucker shirt. You can get it there. But yeah, lots of talk about how the algorithms on these different platforms don't like it when I try to promote stuff. And I mean, check it out, you know, like the viewership on my stream right now on TikTok went from like 80 people down to 50 when I started talking about this. Somebody asked, did it get funded? I'm super excited. It did get funded, and you can still go get a copy. So despite the fact that these algorithms don't like it when I talk about this stuff, I still have people in my audience who show up and show out and come out and support. And I hope that you're getting this album not just to support, but because you want it, because you want a cool double vinyl. So that's all I'll say about that. Thanks to everyone who jumped on that. Let's get into a little Bad Take Brigade, shall we? This week on The Brigade is someone that I'm a fan of. I like this person. And in the interest of being fair and balanced, I'm including this person on The Brigade because no one's safe. Even people I like and am a fan of can have bad takes from time to time. I like this person's podcast, Revisionist History. I like when this person is a guest on podcasts that I listen to. I think that he's a fun person to listen to speak. But this is a bad take that's making the rounds on TikTok this week. This is Malcolm Gladwell talking about why he thinks it's bad if you work from home.
It's not in your best interest to work at home. I know it's a hassle to come to the office, but like, you know, if you're just sitting in your pajamas in your bedroom, is that the life, is that the work life you want to live, right? Don't you want to feel part of something? I mean, it just, I'm really getting very frustrated with the inability of people in positions of leadership to explain this effectively to their employees, that if we don't feel like we're part of something important, what's the point? It's not, you're not just doing this to get a pay. If it's just a paycheck, then it's like, then you, what have you reduced your life to?
Yeah. So Malcolm Gladwell is getting a fair amount of smoke on TikTok right now for this take. And I think rightly so. I think that that's fair. I think that he earned that smoke with that bad take. So he starts off by saying it's not in your best interest to work from home. Like, what is that? Who is you in that scenario? Because certainly there are certain jobs where like it's not in your best interest or in anyone's best interest for you to work from home. If you're a doctor or a nurse or a garbage collector or a person who does like home repairs, like a repairman, a plumber, something like that. Yeah, it's not in your best interest to work from home because you need to be out in the field doing your job. But for people who just like answer emails and go to meetings and sort of meet deadlines and like fill in Excel spreadsheets and stuff like that, like why? Why is it not in my best interest to work from home? For someone who does my job, who just makes content from my house, of course it's in my best interest to work from home. Would it be better if I rented space at a WeWork and like worked at an office space where I'm surrounded by office culture and I have a little break room where I can chat with other people who are also renting space at the office and play ping pong with people? Would that be more motivating? I mean, maybe. Maybe I'd feel more part of something, which is the other thing that Malcolm says here is, don't you want to feel part of something? I work from home by myself. Sometimes, admittedly, it can be lonely, and sometimes it can be hard to get motivated to start the workday because it's just me and I'm the boss. But I don't think I would trade my working situation for working at an office. The only reason I would want to work at an office or work on site is if it was absolutely necessary. I go on site when I book a commercial and I need to be on set to shoot that commercial. I work there. I can't do that from home. So there are plenty of jobs and plenty of fields of work where you have to be there. You have to, in order to do the job. But there are also plenty of jobs that people are more than capable of doing remotely. And I think that you can still feel a part of something, a part of a team. I have many aspects of my job are teaming up with brands and sponsors to make sponsored content. I don't fly to wherever their headquartered offices are to make sure that it feels like we're all part of the same thing and pulling in the same direction and show up and do my work for them in person. Because it's just not necessary. The work that I'm doing for them can be fulfilled by us meeting on a Zoom call, chatting about what the common goals are that we each have for this campaign that we're doing, that they're paying me to make content for, making sure that we're all on the same page, and then just sort of having email correspondence from that point out where I submit drafts of the script that I'm writing for them, drafts of the video that I'm making, they give feedback, and we do that back and forth. We do that with the contracts and stuff like that. I do not need to ever see these people in person for us to have a successful collaboration and for us to feel like we successfully partnered and that we were a part of something. I think it's a really weird take from Malcolm, especially from a person like Malcolm, who's privileged enough to have a job that he really likes, a job that is cool. His job is like going on podcasts and sharing takes like that one, doing speaking engagements, and every few years writing a book. Like, that's what Malcolm Gladwell's job is. And he also has a podcast called Revisionist History. Again, I already said I'm a fan of Malcolm Gladwell. I like his podcast. I did think there was a funny take from Lolo on TikTok, who said, Malcolm Gladwell, a guy who's famous for pointing out that you could get good at something by practicing it for 10,000 hours. And I was like, a take that I'd never thought of before, that it's like, we all give Malcolm Gladwell so much credit for this observation that he made, that if you practice something for 10,000 hours, you might get good at it. It's like, wow, very novel idea there, Malcolm. So yeah, maybe we do give Malcolm a little bit too much credit for the 10,000 hour theory and some of the stuff that he says. That being said, like I said, I'm a fan of Malcolm. I just think that this take is like really myopic and doesn't encapsulate a lot of people's careers and a lot of people's jobs, and also seems to insinuate that people boil the meaning of their lives down to what they do for money, what they do to pay the rent. And a lot of people aren't lucky enough to have a job that fulfills them in a life's purpose sense. So like I said, Malcolm Gladwell is lucky enough to have a job that feels very fulfilling to him. I'm lucky enough to have a job that is very fulfilling in many ways to me. But a lot of people aren't. A lot of people just have a job that is just a paycheck, and their life's meaning is derived from their relationships, their family, their friendships, the vacations that they take, the places that they visit, the passions and hobbies that they have outside of work time. So for people like that, if it's possible for them to do all of the requirements, fulfill all of the requirements of their job from a home office, and then once the workday is done, punch the clock and step outside the door, and there's their family, and there's their partner or their pet, or their friends are just right out there, or just their favorite TV show is just right out there, and they don't have to waste several hours a day commuting to and from the office. What's wrong with that? Like, what's wrong with that? There's so many people who just, under capitalism, under a system where everyone has to be bringing in income in order to afford to live. This is another TikTok I saw recently where someone was like, isn't it crazy the concept that like some people can't afford to live? That you have to be able to have enough money to live in our current system? So I think what Malcolm's take also fails to see is that like this idea of employers being tasked with making sure that they're adequately explaining to their employees why they should want to be a part of the office culture and why they should want to feel a part of something and why their job should mean more than just a paycheck. All of this is just a symptom of late stage unfettered capitalism. Like, this system doesn't really need to exist. We don't need to have a system where so many people are yoked with having to participate in a job 5 days out of the week, 9 to 5, that they don't really care about. And that is the situation for a lot of people. There are a lot of people who have a job just because it brings in money. I once lived like that. When I worked in the service industry and worked in restaurants, my whole life I've wanted to do what I do now as my job. I've always wanted storytelling, creating art, creation, you know, music creation, and even, I didn't really realize it, but content creation, to be what I'm doing for my job. But for most of my life, I had to support that dream with supplemental income from working at a restaurant. And there's just no way the people who owned those restaurants that I worked for, the managers that I worked under, could pay me enough or manage me well enough to make me fulfilled by that job. Every time I was working in a restaurant, I couldn't escape the idea that I was just only here because I had to be to make money, to pay bills. And that's the only reason why I'm here. It's a soul-sucking job. There are plenty of soul-sucking jobs, but like busting your ass, like my best nights in a restaurant, I was lucky if I could clear $350 on my best nights. And to make that $350, I had to put in some of the hardest, most backbreaking labor imaginable, like of my life, of anything that I ever do. I had to like put my body and my mind and my soul through the ringer for a 6 to 8 hour long shift in a restaurant in order to clear $350. It's just not worth it. I would get to the end of those nights, and some nights, sometimes those nights were the most dejecting nights. They were the nights where I felt the most uninspired because I went, wow, I just went through one of the hardest days of labor I've ever experienced, and all I have to show for it is like $300. 300 like dirty dollars from different people who tipped me throughout the shift. And knowing that it's possible for me to work in a more fulfilling field and make a much better return on my labor, that kind of work is really, really dejecting and soul-sucking, and it's really hard for any manager, no matter how much I like them personally, to convince me that I should be excited about showing up to work in that environment. And that's just the reality that so many workers exist in. And this really is a problem. The reason why I say this is a problem with unfettered late-stage capitalism is we have this model in modern capitalism that is based on exponential growth, that is based on the company, the corporation, continuing to increase profits on a year-to-year basis ad infinitum, that there is no end in sight to when a company will say, we are now profitable enough, and if we can maintain this level of profitability, we should be good to move forward into the future. This model of needing to continually, quarterly, post increasingly bigger and bigger profit margins is part of what makes people uninspired about in the workplace, because it's no longer enough for the company just to be profitable, which it should be enough. This means that everyone who works for the company is getting paid what they were contracted to be paid, and the company still has a surplus of revenue. That should be enough, just the fact that the company is paying everyone that works there. But that's no longer enough in unfettered capitalism, in exponential growth, in an exponential growth model. They have a specific target for what they need to hit each quarter, for how much their profits need to increase in order for them to feel like the company is still working the way that it should work. And if they don't hit those marks, they do things like layoffs. They lay people off and they fire people that they don't need to fire. It's not like the company's like, oh no, we're losing money. Like everyone that works here is now no longer getting paid. We can no longer afford to pay our employees unless we do layoffs. It's literally just like, we're not hitting the mark for profits that we're supposed to be hitting. We still profited last quarter, but we were half a percentage off. So we're going to lay off 100 employees across different sectors. And that's just not necessary. This exists in the film industry too. I talked about this with Comedian of Cinema the last time he was on, that like, it's no longer enough for a movie to just be profitable. There's certain kinds of movies that studios will view as a failure unless they make $1 billion. So like the movie Solo that Disney produced. It's a Star Wars movie, so their expectation for that movie is that it will profit them $1 billion. That movie was made for like $200 million. I don't know. I don't have the numbers in front of me. It's probably like $200 to $250 million. I don't think it was made for more than that. I bet it was made for even less. It might have even been made for like $150. But I would say it's in the $200 to $250 million range, and it made about $700 million at the box office, which means that after everyone was paid, after the movie was paid for, all the costs of paying all the animators, paying all the crew, the actors, everyone, after everyone got paid and the cost of the $200 million that was put into this movie to pay for the locations, the sets, all that stuff, $200 million was spent, the movie profited $500 million, but Disney saw it as a failure because it didn't profit $1 billion. This is what the exponential growth model does, is it sort of perverts the work that everyone's doing and putting into these corporations. So when people work for a corporation that they know will lay them off if they don't hit a certain percentage of profits, it's really uninspiring, and it makes people not really care about the place that they work for, even if the place that they work for is offering some kind of service or good into the world that the world needs to continue moving forward. Now, many people probably work for corporations that they look at and go, I think the world would be fine if this corporation didn't exist. It might even be better off if this corporation didn't exist. So this take from Malcolm Gladwell that basically employers need to figure out a way to inspire their employees to care more, to care enough about their jobs, to want to be physically at the office instead of working from home, is just sort of like, yeah, like I said, myopic and stupid and bad. Especially coming from someone like Malcolm Gladwell, who does really, really well at a job that he really, really likes. You know, if people who work for corporations that only exist so that jobs can exist because capitalism demands it, want to work from home so that they can get back to seeing their family and their loved ones and get back to doing the things they actually care about, want to work from home so they can get back to doing those things quicker, there's nothing wrong with that. That's totally fine. They don't need to be at the office. All right. Steven Tiff291 on TikTok just asked, Austin, are you happy? Yeah, I think reasonably, yes, I am. I think I'm a pretty lucky and fortunate person. I'm one of the people who has good relationships outside of my job, and I also like my job, and I do struggle with my own fair share of ups and downs, and my fair share of struggles, but I think generally, I'm a pretty happy person. So thanks for that question. Let's move into the main meat of what I want to talk about on this episode. let's just listen to this TikTok really quick.
So police in Kansas City are protesting a manslaughter charge on one of their own by not responding to 911 calls. This is Daniel Fox, and recently saw a break-in, so he decided to call the cops, and the cops told him on the phone, hey, we're not doing this stuff anymore. Daniel stayed up all night with his gun, worried that the intruder would come back, and he later tweeted about the incident, saying, yeah, the cops didn't do anything when I reported a break-in. The cops then started harassing Daniel on Twitter to try and get him to take down the tweet, and they left him this voicemail.
Hi, Mr. Fox. This is your number. My name's James Gunsberg. I'm the Watch One captain in Metro Patrol. You posted something on Twitter begging for attention, so I was calling you back to try to explain to you our procedures, our limitations that have been placed upon us since the Fourth Amendment ruling.
Daniel cuts off the audio for the press there because he's actively suing the department for the rest of the tape. And the Fourth Amendment ruling that the cops are referring to involves this detective, Eric Vulcanier, who killed an unarmed black man that was backing his truck into his own driveway. So just to recap, cops, not satisfied with this ruling that one of their own got 6 years for killing someone over a traffic incident, decides, yeah, we don't feel like doing our job. And if any of you bootlickers want to look up this case and talk about the planted gun, I will embarrass the ish out of you.
Okie dokie. So long story short, this is a story about police officers in Kansas City not wanting to do their job anymore as a form of protest because one of their own got 6 years for unlawfully murdering a black man who was just backing his truck into his own driveway and then planting a gun at the scene to make it look like it was a justified murder. This is exactly what people mean when they say fuck cops and when they say all cops are bastards, ACAB. When they say fuck 12, this is what they mean. Okay? This is what they're talking about. So when people say no good cops, cops are just a gang, it's a blood in, blood out situation and there aren't good cops, and people want to jump to their defense and go, come on, you can't generalize like that. There are good cops. They're talking about situations like this. There's an entire Atlantic article called Police Punish the Good Apples that you should look up that just details several stories of different whistleblowers and quote-unquote good apples within the police trying to do the right thing and holding other police officers accountable when they break the law or act in morally dubious ways. And as a result of trying to do the right thing, they either get demoted or actively antagonized by the others in their precinct, or they just get straight up fired. There are several articles detailing just story after story after story of stuff like this. And this is what we're talking about, is like, it's not to say that you can't find examples of police officers doing occasionally good things. It's not to say that you if you went and looked, you wouldn't find an example of like, well, look, here's a police officer, like here's a video of a police officer pulling someone out of a burning building or saving a kid from a kidnapper, or, you know, bringing a human trafficker to justice and finding where they are and getting into their hideout and arresting them. That's, first of all, that's part of their job description. That's what they're supposed to be doing, like enforcing the law and upholding the law and looking out for society's best interest and making sure that antisocial behavior and unlawful and criminal behavior is punished and is dealt with. That's like part of the job description. So when you find stuff like that, it's like, okay, yeah, so you can find instances of police officers doing the job that they're supposed to be doing. And that's all well and good. But when stuff like this happens, when a police officer murders someone who's backing their car into their driveway, and that police officer is rightly held accountable, which is also just a very, very rare thing in America. It's very rare that that police officer will actually see any consequences. It's super, 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 like, alarmingly rare that that will ever happen. But when someone actually does face consequences and their entire precinct as a result protests by not doing their job, that's what we mean by there's no good cops, and by ACAB is other police officers. If the reality is that there's just a few bad apples sprinkled throughout all these different precincts, but the majority of police officers got into law enforcement because they wanted to do the right thing and they wanted to affect good in the world, what we would see is every time one of these videos comes out of a police officer blatantly breaking the law or acting like they're above the law or just behaving in kind of morally repugnant ways, you would see the vast majority of police officers in no uncertain terms denouncing that behavior and making sure that it's clear that they do not stand for that behavior, and that if anything, they hold themselves and each other to a higher standard as enforcers of the law, as protectors of the law, as people whose calling in society is to be the voice and the face of the law. If anything, they should hold themselves and their counterparts to a higher standard. And what we actually see in America is that they seem to hold themselves and their counterparts to a much lower standard when it comes to the law. They seem to almost behave as though they should be exempt from the law. They should be above the law. And anytime one of them sees consequences for unlawful behavior or morally dubious behavior, they think that that's unacceptable. And they act as though that's unacceptable. And they go to bat for that person rather than denouncing that person's behavior. So their behavior is literally the opposite of what you would expect if the majority of police officers are good. When the footage came out of Uvalde and we just had footage of police officers twiddling their thumbs while children were being murdered in school, you would think that if the majority of police officers are good, You would think that police officers across the country would come out in droves and say, hey, the police officers who went and handled that situation did not do their jobs properly and probably should be held criminally negligible in this situation. They have blood on their hands and they should probably have charges brought against them. That's what you would think. But instead, you see that police officers across the country back each other in these situations because they function like a gang. And anyone among them who tries to be a whistleblower and tries to point out criminal behavior or corrupt behavior or morally dubious behavior within their ranks is made an example of and is demoted or fired. This happens over and over and over again. So this is leading to the question that I want to talk about on this podcast, which is what does it take to be a good person inside of a corrupt organization? That's the question, I think. What does it take to be a good person inside of a corrupt organization? And I want to look at three different organizations. I'm looking at the police, obviously, to start off with. I want to look at modern American Christianity, and I also want to look at the modern current state of the Republican Party. So starting off with the police, we've already talked a little bit about my thoughts on that, but an example that I thought of is, I think basically what this boils down to when it comes to Christians, when it comes to Republicans, when it comes to police, when it comes to any group like this, is people bristle at absolutisms and generalizations. People don't like absolutisms and generalizations. So when you say something like the modern Republican Party is morally deficient, morally defunct, has abandoned reality and abandoned truth, and nobody who is left who is successful in that party is beholden to the truth, people bristle at that because it sounds too broad brush. They're like, well, surely amongst the ranks of these people, there are still some good, honest people remaining who are sincere about the values that they hold and are part of that party because they sincerely believe in that party and its ability to affect change for good. Or with Christianity, when you criticize modern American Christianity in the way that it doesn't resemble the values preached by their namesake, you know, Jesus Christ, at all. There will always be people, anytime I make a video criticizing modern American Christianity, there will always be people in my comments who say, you know, I just want to let you know, as a Christian, not all Christians are like this. My church isn't like this. And who want to defend and say, we're not all like this. People really bristle at generalizations and absolutisms. So I think that's where this kind of starts. But an example that I thought of is, like, I'm a white, straight, cisgender man. I sort of stand atop the very tip top of the privileged totem pole. If I were to be a person who bristles when people criticize white people, and they just use that as a kind of all-encompassing term, white people do this, or white people benefit from this, and that's why they behave this way. Sort of speaking about white people as an institution, as like a class, as a part of a power structure in society, if that made me bristle and I thought, well, not all white people are like that, and I'm thinking about myself and going, I'm not a bad person. I'm a person who donates to charities frequently. Sometimes I help my neighbors move. I try to engage in service. I try to show up for people in my life. I try to make sure that I let the people in my life know that they matter to me. I try to do good things. So I think, well, I'm not a bad person, and you can't be talking about me. But every time a white person publicly does something racist or furthers the ideology of white supremacy, I support that person. If every time that happens, I support that person rather than denouncing that person and actively working to dismantle white supremacy and the harmful power structure that keeps me in the position of privilege that I'm in, if my behavior in those instances is that way, where, like, yeah, I can find examples of me doing good things, helping people in good ways, but when it comes to the ways in which my identity allows me to benefit inordinately when it comes to the ways in which my identity allows me to abuse power structures that are put in place, I don't do my part to dismantle that. And instead, I actually go to bat for it. And I support racists and white supremacists. I'm not sure that as a white person, as a member of that group, I'm doing what I need to do to be a good person inside of that group, as a part of that group. There can still be aspects of my life where I'm doing good things and trying to be a good person. But in that sense, as a member of that community, if I'm upholding that community's most egregious sins and most egregious behaviors, I'm not doing my part to be a good person as a part of that group. So that's sort of what I mean with like police and with Christianity and with the Republican Party. And those are just three examples that I'm zeroing in on, but you could do this with a lot of different groups. But like, if you show me a video of a particular police officer doing a good deed, first of all, I'll say it's kind of his job or her job, kind of their job, kind of part of their job description. So like, they don't get too much credit. It's sort of what they're supposed to be doing. But if you show me a video of like, look, watch this police officer do a good job, but that same police officer backs up other cops when they break the law and refuses to call out their coworkers and their partners when they break the law and act in morally dubious ways, I'm not sure that police officer is doing what they need to do to be a good person within the ranks of that institution, if that makes sense. I really do believe that police officers should be held to a higher standard when it comes to the law rather than a lower one. I really do believe that. I really do believe that we should expect more from them. I also think that we should actually have more intense punishments for police officers when they do things like commit murder. We are giving these people, we are entrusting them with the power and the authority to take life when they deem it necessary, because they are regularly in situations where they're in shootouts with people, and it's kind of like, well, them or us, and we have to do this to defend our lives. And that happens, and we are trusting them with like the responsibility to make those choices ethically and morally and responsibly. And when they don't do that, when we have clear video evidence that they didn't do that, when they show up to Breonna Taylor's house in the middle of the night and shoot 10 rounds through her window and murder a person while that person's asleep, I think that there should be worse punishments for people who have been endowed with the power to take life and then abused that power. Personally. But yeah, it really is this question of like, can there be good people inside of corrupt organizations if those people aren't actively working to dismantle the corruption within their ranks? So stepping now into modern American Christianity, I make it in that framework, modern American Christianity. And I really could go back through history and talk about the Crusades and talk about the Inquisition and talk about the wars that have been fought and the millions of lives that have been lost in the name of Christianity and how perverted the gospel of Christianity has become. And I'm talking about specifically the gospel preached by the preacher Jesus of Nazareth from the book, the Bible. There's plenty of stuff in that book that's really messed up, but the actual stuff that one character in the book said is pretty like straightforward. It's like about humility and peace and love above all other values. And that's just not what most of organized Christianity looks like. It mostly looks like opulence. And I mean, I have a hard time, like my family and I just went to Ireland, and every time I go to Europe or anywhere that has old religious buildings, cathedrals, things like that, they're big draws for tourists. Tourists love to go and see, and it is cool just as a marvel of human engineering to step into a hundreds of years old building and be like, wow, how did people make this? In the 1400s or the 1500s, how did they build this building? I can't conceive of it, it's like the structures themselves are really, really impressive and cool. But I always can't shake the feeling that like the opulence of those buildings, the overt gaudiness and flaunting of disproportionate wealth, that like at the time there were people living in like straw huts and they were putting all of the wealth and all of the money into building these like gaudy, over the top shows of power and authority in the community, these cathedrals, that it's like, this does not jive with Jesus saying it's easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. These things are incongruous. This overt flaunting of wealth, this overt flaunting of power, and these constant historical abuses of that wealth and that power. And then to constantly be told by people within the ranks, and I've seen this in my own church, the church that I was raised in, Mormonism, I've met so many people who are like, I want to affect change from within. The reason why I stay in the church is because I want to be a force of for good in the church. And it's like, okay, cool. I can see that. I can see the logic there, that like you see the problems and the way that the foundational principles that your religion was based on have been perverted and misused. You see that and you want to affect change from within. I can see that, but are you actively calling out your leaders when they do things that are racist, that are sexist, that are blatantly misogynistic, that are homophobic, that are transphobic, that are demonstrably harmful to the community? Are you calling out your leaders and holding them accountable? Are you being active in the cause to dismantle those harmful mindsets in your institution? And if you're not, if you're sort of quietly looking at those things and going, yeah, I wish those things didn't exist, it bothers me, but I choose to focus on the good that we do, I don't know, and again, this is a question I'm asking, but I don't know that you're doing what you need to do to affect good change from within. It kind of just seems like you're taking the good stuff. It's sort of like a person saying like, well, look at all this good that police officers do. You're taking the good stuff and completely ignoring all of the very egregious amoral stuff, all of the egregious abuses of power, and sort of ignoring that stuff. And you know, I mean, it's been said before that silence is compliance, that like being silent in the face of incredibly immoral acts makes you complicit. And again, so I'm just asking, like, what does it take to actually affect change from within organizations that have been corrupted by power, by greed, by money? So yeah, I see people all the time when I make videos criticizing modern American Christianity or just Christianity in general, from people saying, well, my church isn't like that. And it's like, okay, well, what is your church doing? Is your church regularly acting to counteract the great harm that Christianity has done to the LGBTQ plus community historically? Are you actively making strides to make sure that queer people feel comfortable and loved within your ranks? Are you actively making strides to overcome the historical racism of your organization? Like, are you being active in the cause to dismantle those things within Christianity? Or are you just sort of paying lip service to like, hey, those other churches that do all that racist stuff, I'm not with them. And God, I haven't even gotten into ecclesiastical sexual abuse. Haven't even gotten into like the Catholic Church and sexual abuse. And lately, the AP just published a story on the Mormon Church and sexual abuse, and how the Mormon Church has been handling sexual abuse historically by just essentially sweeping it under the rug. They had a hotline where people could call in and report sexual abuse, and they would just sort of acknowledge it and meet with the person who was accused and usually quietly let them go of their calling, and that was it. But not holding those people criminally responsible for, like, breaking the law? Because that would reflect poorly on their organization. So at the end of the day, what I see with these corrupt organizations is, like, people's allegiance, at the end of the day, at the very bottom of it, still belongs to the organization above all else. And oftentimes, holding the organization criminally culpable for things that they're doing that are literally breaking the law, or morally culpable for things that they're doing that are objectively bad things, if it makes the organization look bad, and if it can harm the organization and the strength of the organization and the forward progress of the organization, these people choose to side with the organization. And quietly, behind closed doors, they will pay lip service to, like, yeah, you know, yeah, there's things that I wish didn't exist. But so that's what I need to see. I need to see that when people say, well, my church isn't like that, I need to see that. I need you to be able to demonstrate, what are you doing to actively call out and make sure that you're and hold accountable the historic injustices that your organization has committed? And if you're not doing that, are you actually staying inside the organization to affect change? The last one we'll talk about is the Republican Party. I recently saw a TikTok from a guy who said, I'm just going to go ahead and say this. You can no longer support the current Republican Party. He was being very specific. The current state of the Republican Party, you can no longer support the current party and be a good person. Maybe there was a time in the past where it was a little bit more murky, and there were good people and bad people, and there were good candidates and bad candidates, but you can no longer support the current state of the party and still be a good person. Again, statements like this are hard for people to take in because they're absolutisms and generalizations. And there are a lot of people who go, I don't know, I have friends or family who support the Republican Party because they're just kind of ignorant to what's actually going on inside the party. But they're not bad people. They just historically have voted Republican, and they don't really look into things on their own very much. But they're not bad. They're just not really aware. And so that's another excuse that people get, is like, can you still be a good person in ignorance? Can you use that as a shield of just going, I'm just not aware of any of that stuff? There's a lot of people within Christianity that just go, I wasn't aware that stuff happened. They're like, they've made it their entire lives without ever hearing the horror stories of, like, what goes on in conversion therapy, you know? Can you use that as an excuse in the information era, in the era of the internet? Especially with politics, when, like, I think you should expect that people have an ethical or moral responsibility to be informed on things that they're voting on before they go to the voting booth. I think you should be able to expect that people should be somewhat aware of who the candidates are that they're voting for, and that if they're not aware of who they're voting for, that's sort of ethically murky, right? To go and throw your vote, your weight behind somebody without actually knowing what they stand for. Now, this question of, like, is there anybody good left in the Republican Party, in the modern Republican Party? Look, I think that what Liz Cheney has been doing with the January 6th committee is absolutely commendable. And I think that what Mitt Romney has done in the wake of Trumpism, the way that people like that have held the line of honoring truth and keeping their principles intact, is really laudable. And I would go as far as saying, like, those are good people within the organization, or at least people who, like, are genuine and honest and care about truth and care about, like, decency. But currently, the reality of that party is that you can no longer succeed unless you are willing to divorce yourself from the truth. What I mean by that is that the increasing strategy for Republican candidates across the country is to embrace Donald Trump's election lies about 2020. Basically, the litmus test for voters right now is, does this person accept the results of the 2020 election, or does this person promote the lie that the 2020 election was a fraud? Even though we just have it, there's just no argument, there's no case remaining to be made that the 2020 election was a fraud. It's just not true. It's objectively not true that the 2020 election was stolen. But the only way to be successful in the modern American Republican Party is to lie about the 2020 election. You have to go all in on Trumpism in order to be successful in that party today. So that being said, and showing that increasingly anybody left that does have good moral character is being ousted from the party and is losing their career. I mean, Liz Cheney and the Liz Cheneys and the Mitt Romneys are absolutely putting their careers in politics on the line and basically sacrificing their careers in the name of honesty, integrity, truth, and like kudos to those people, absolutely. But are they? Is there room for them in the modern structure of it anymore? And can voters who support candidates who are succeeding on the backs of overt lies and like basically nothing but lies, and candidates who are overtly now trying to turn America into a Christian nationalist authoritarian state, and this is no longer like a secret. This is no longer a secret agenda. This is now the out loud agenda, is that they want to make America a Christian nationalist authoritarian state. Can voters who support that be considered good people? Again, all of these people individually undoubtedly have done good things in their lives, throughout the courses of their lives. Does that mean you are a good person, though, inside of that organization? Like, you are a good member of that organization. And this is, I don't know the actual answer to this question. This is a question that I'm asking. And I really don't know. Because this goes into a deeper philosophical question of, like, what is good and bad? Do good and bad actually exist, or are they just simply man-made concepts? Are they just created philosophical concepts? And because, like, here's the reality. Here's the reality is Donald Trump, as dishonest and as morally repugnant as he is, has done good things in his life, has like helped somebody out at some point. There's somebody out there who has a story where they were like, Donald Trump like really helped me out. He came through for me big in a moment where I needed him to. Undoubtedly, there have been times where he's shown up for his kids in ways, in private moments where they've been like, that was cool, what my dad just said, what my dad just did. That's more than likely happened before. However much you don't like the idea of that. People like Ted Bundy. Ted Bundy probably had friends in his life who, like, at some point needed a favor, and he came through for them and helped them out. A person who's done, like, really objectively, like, evil things has done some good things. So this concept of, like, can you be a good person? I don't know. That really goes to the whole moral or philosophical question of, like, what does it mean to be good? What is good and what is bad? But really, this question that I'm asking on this specific episode is, like, how do you be good and affect good inside of an organization that has major moral deficiencies? Because again, I go back to the example of, like, if I want to be a quote unquote good white person, then it is imperative that I call out and work to dismantle actively racism and white supremacy. I have to do that if I want to be good inside of the institution of white people and whiteness. If I don't do that, then I'm allowing the greatest evils of white people and whiteness to continue. At the very least, I'm just allowing them to continue. At worst, I could be actively helping these things to continue to thrive within those institutions. So yeah, I don't know. Those are the questions. I don't know how much my computer is leaking into the microphone right now, but it's going, it's really overheating right now. Let's see. Lindsay Chakraborty on TikTok says, I worked for him at missuniverse.org. He was actually very nice and respectful at all times, opposite of what he's doing now. I've actually heard this from so many people who have met Donald Trump in real life that, like, couldn't have been a nicer guy, was just like an absolute gent, and was just lovely to meet and very personable. And I've heard that many times, and I actually have no problem believing it. I bet he's a good hang. Like, I bet, like, getting to go and shoot the shit with the guy is like, ah, you know what? He's funny. He's personable. He's nice. But, like, we know from him being very public and from that he's just incredibly morally dubious, and he's allowed his power and his status and his privilege to go to his head to an extent where he's essentially completely divorced from truth and reality and objectivity. And he's just kind of like a power obsessed narcissist. And so whether or not he's a good person within the structure of what he represents, is he like a good one of those? Is he a good billionaire? Is he a good politician? Is he a good leader? And I don't think he is. Caddy Daz on TikTok says, if you want to force your religion onto others, then I don't think you're a good person. So that's another thing that Christianity does, is in a lot of modern American Christianity, is there's a lot of modern, this is sort of an intersection between the Republican Party and modern American Christianity. There's a lot of modern American Christians and modern American Republicans who are hell-bent on enforcing Christian values, quote-unquote Christian values, onto all of society through law, which I think is pretty morally dubious. And again, like, I say Christian values when I'm talking about things like not letting gay people get married and, like, making sure that women don't have access to life-saving health care. And I don't think that those things are actually values that the preacher talked about in the New Testament would endorse, but they are values that are the result of the marriage of the Republican Party and Christianity. Yeah, William Young brings up another one. This is also part of the marriage of the Republican Party and Christianity, trying to eliminate public school funding to push Christian indoctrination in schools. Cool story about that. Recently, Texas, which has been trying to ban certain books and literature in school, under a law that they wrote that detailed certain like things that aren't allowed in certain books on school grounds, actually a Texas school had to ban the Bible because it fell under, it had all these qualifications of like being too sexually explicit and too violent and things like that, which was really funny. The attempt to push Christian indoctrination sort of backfired. Smokey asks, was the 2000 election a lie? Honestly, I can't answer that question. I don't know enough about that. I was too young at the time and I wasn't involved enough, and I haven't actually looked into it enough. There seems to be a lot of people who think so. I don't know. I don't know. I would have to look into that. Regina Delisle 781 says, my mom believes that Snopes is biased and thus lies. Well, this is sort of the problem with the question of, like, can Republican voters be good people? And, like, this question of, does ignorance absolve you? So, like, does just being an ignorant person who refuses to accept any evidence other than the evidence that already jives with your pre-existing position, does that absolve you from any, like, moral responsibility or culpability you have when the leaders you elect do morally dubious things? And I don't know, man. Like, I don't, like, do you have, this is another question, is like, do you have an ethical or moral responsibility to be informed? This is what's so funny about, like, anti-wokeism, is the idea of being woke is just sort of being active about being aware of societal injustices and just trying to stay educated and stay aware of, like, where the deficiencies in society lie, where the inequities lie. That's all being woke is. And so this whole movement of being, like, proudly anti-woke is people who are sort of wearing it as a badge of honor that they rebuke awareness or the idea of being awake to societal injustices. And so it sort of is like, are these people ignorant and they just don't know? Or are they actually proud of their ignorance and actively ignorant. I saw a video the other day where a person was arguing with a flat earther, and the flat earther was asking them, like, they asked the question, what falls faster? What falls at a faster rate, a tennis ball or a bowling ball? And the person that they asked said, well, they both fall at the same rate. And the flat earther said, no, they don't. And that's because gravity affects different things differently. And the person was like, no, that's not true. They fall at the same rate, especially like in a vacuum, they fall at the same rate. Like that's just how that works. And the person was like, no, they don't. And this guy goes, hey, if I can demonstrate to you, if I can show you, if I can like have you look and demonstrate to you, and I'll get a bowling ball and a tennis ball, and I can show you that they fall at the same rate, will you acknowledge that you were wrong? Or like, what will your response be? And the person goes, my response will be that you faked the evidence, that you somehow cheated and that you lied. This is sort of the world that a lot of voters in the modern American or in the modern Republican Party live in, is that it doesn't matter what evidence you present to them. Their response will be, well, that's a lie. That's not true. So it doesn't matter how much evidence exists that Donald Trump lied about this, that, or the other thing. Whatever evidence you show to them, just like this person said, my mom thinks Snopes is biased. Whatever you show them, whoever, doesn't matter how reputable the source is, doesn't matter if it's Republican legislators who are saying, we looked into this. It doesn't matter if it's the Trump-appointed leader of the FBI who's saying, our investigation, a guy who was appointed by Trump, doesn't matter who it is. They will say, oh, well, that person's biased, that person has been corrupted, that person, and that's sort of the, so it's almost like at a certain point when you're being active about your ignorance, when you're actively defending and protecting your ignorance and making sure that your ignorance can't give way to new information, yeah, I kind of do think that you have like an ethical culpability there, that you're sort of ethically or morally responsible for the fact that like you've had opportunities to become educated, to become aware, and you've sort of proudly rebuked those opportunities and like shirked those off in favor of reinforcing ignorance. I don't know. Goaty Goat on YouTube says, I consider liberty to be the only real truth on a socio-political level. If you act, vote, or support a movement away from liberty in any form, you're not being good. The 2000 election was stolen. It was outright given to the other guy. A Democrat who held that worldview would be evil too. Oh, I think you mean a Democrat who was trying to do things that take away from liberty. I can see that. How regardless of where you land on the political spectrum, you should be supporting things that increase human dignity, human rights, the integrity of the process and of the system, and the integrity of the foundational principles of like life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. If you're not supporting things that further those causes, then you're not, I can see that, as a position. Blessed Starfish says, science requires peer-reviewed results. Like, folks just don't believe in science. And that's really what I'm talking about with this, like, willful ignorance. It's like, yes, yeah, science requires that, but there are plenty of people, again, going back to Christians and Republicans, who just flat out, actively, proudly deny science and say that science is biased or science has its own agendas. When it comes to climate change, when it comes to evolution, things like that, like Christians will just say like, nope, the world is 6,000 years old, despite all evidence to the contrary. I know a guy who works at NASA, who I was talking to recently, and I was talking to him about like multiverse theory and all this stuff. I hope to get him on the podcast soon. but he said to me, either the universe is the way it appears to be and is as old as it appears to be, or there is a God, a creator, who designed it to appear that way. Those are the two options. And if there is a God who designed it to appear that way, that's a weird thing for that God to have done, you know? But yeah, so like, I think when you're in a place where you're just unwilling to see any evidence other than the evidence that allows you to stay where you're comfortable, then you are sort of you sort of do have to own some culpability. I think it's the same for the police. Like, people who are so hellbent on backing the boys in blue that they just sort of plug their ears and hum every time a video comes out of one of these guys blatantly breaking the law, and other police officers don't hold that guy accountable, and they can see that the entire institution is built on backing each other at any cost, and that they don't do what they need to do to hold each other accountable when they act poorly. Yeah, like, the entire organization becomes accountable, and people who defend it become accountable. Chris Craig says, I feel the universe does what it wants and does not owe us an explanation, LOL. I agree, in general, and this sort of goes to the question of, like, do good and bad actually exist, or are those just concepts that we created to sort of define antisocial and pro-social behaviors, like things that are good for the collective, things that are ultimately good for the species and good for life, and things that are bad for the species or bad for life, and we've sort of tried to lump behaviors into those two categories. So that's the real question, and maybe there's a whole other podcast that I'll have to do on just the concepts of good and bad and what do those mean. But yeah, that's the question I had for today, is sort of like, can you be inside of an organization that is rotting from the inside out and actually still be a good part of that organization if you're not actively working to dismantle those morally broken pieces? And I don't know. I don't know. Thanks for all the comments. Thanks for hanging out with me over on TikTok, over on YouTube. The album, you guys, it's out, it's streaming. You can go stream it, go take a ride, listen to it after you listen to this podcast, and go pick it up on Bandcamp, austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com, or at the link in my bio. Go get yourself a Nobody Cool Likes Tucker Carlson shirt, or a On Point Like a Laser shirt, just a shirt with my face on it that says On Point Like a Laser. Those are fun too. Hopefully I'm going to have some bucket hats coming out here soon that I'm going to make with Sarah. Thanks for all the comments. Yeah. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music, you know where, austin-archer.com or austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com or on Spotify or Apple Music. Patreon.com/Austin Archer. We love our Patreon patrons. Love those Patreon patrons. If you want to support this content on a monthly basis, throw me $4 a month, buy me a coffee every month, head on over to patreon.com/Austin Archer. You know what a free thing you can do if you want to support this content is? Subscribe to my YouTube. That's free. Subscribe to the YouTube, or, you know, follow me on Twitter, follow me on Instagram, but YouTube's probably the one that I'm like, do that for sure. Or leave a review over on Apple Podcasts and a five-star rating and a review, and I'll read it on the show and review you back as part of review of the review. That's the show. That's everything. Thanks for hanging out. I'm sweating, dude. Sweating. I'm getting real shiny over here in the blanket fort. Exciting things coming up. We'll see you next week. Love you so much. Bye-bye. But I